You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Here is an assignment. Draw a map of the world. First the continents, then the countries, last the cities, name the oceans and major rivers. If you can't do that, you easily can find an atlas to help you. Now, put in the foreign military bases. That is, the military encampments of, let's say, country A, bases that are outside their own boundaries. And where will you find a map to help you complete that task? Our next guest can possibly answer the question. He is Wilbert van der Zijden. We have reached him in the Netherlands, where he's the coordinator for peace and security work at the Transnational Institute, TNI. Afternoon in the Nederland, Wilbert, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Yeah, good day.
Is there a map of what has been called these outposts of empire, foreign military bases?
There are several maps. Many of them need to be updated, I have to admit. But a very good map, I think, is found in a briefing that we published last year, which lists about 900 different foreign military bases, mostly of the U.S., but some of them are from European Union countries.
Is it difficult to compile and keep up to date such a map?
It is, to a certain extent. On the one hand, it's not so difficult because the U.S. Very openly annually reports on where these bases are in their so-called base restructure report. But then from that point onward, it's difficult to find the exact location of all these bases. Often we only have the name of a city or of a town where it's located nearby. And so only with the help of people actually living in these regions, we have been able to make quite an accurate map over time.
When it comes to American bases, people probably because of the current hellhole that the Americans have made of Guantanamo recognize that as in the time of the end of the 19th century, after the Americans defeated Spain, took over territories in Philippines and Cuba, etc., they established land bases. But probably after that, the development of those bases is lost from popular memory, and at least in I would say in Canada. I'm wondering if there are sort of stages that the Americans have gone through in establishing these several hundred, 900 or some military foreign bases.
There are indeed. After 1898, as you say, the U.S. already had bases in Hawaii, Guam, the Philippines, in Guantanamo Bay, in Puerto Rico. But it's mostly after the Second World War that the big expansion of the number of bases started, with what we call the bases in the loser countries. So the countries that lost the Second World War for a long time hosted the largest amount of bases and still do, actually. So it's Germany and Italy have a huge number of bases. And then later on, as well as Japan, and then later on also a high number of bases were established in Korea. What we see after the Cold War ended is that the U.S. opted for smaller bases, less bases in these countries, but more bases altogether. So they started to set up bases in a lot more countries than only these countries and other European Union countries. So by now it's really a sort of global network of military bases that the U.S. has established.
And are large land bases with major troop concentrations, have those come back into fashion again?
Not really. I mean, not outside the regions where there are conflicts now. But what is interesting at the moment, of course, is the discussion about a withdrawal from Iraq, especially now with Obama becoming the president. Because even Obama foresees that the U.S. will remain in Iraq in the form of large bases. So they're talking about so-called enduring bases. These will be between 12 and 18 major bases. Land-based bases with high numbers of troops, between 4,000 to 16,000 troops, that would remain in Iraq after the occupation ends. And this is crucial to us in the sense that this is what we've seen over decades now already, is that the U.S. uses these wars to further establish bases and to sort of further push their frontiers of influence and interest. So the bases that were used to attack Iraq, you know, bases in Greece, bases in Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, even, you know, Germany, Belgium, the UK, etc. Turkey was a major hub. We will now see that the pressure on Iran, for example, is mounting, because all the countries around Iran now are host to American foreign military bases.
The network that has developed called No Bases is an international network. I was wondering if you could give us a bit of a history of how it got started and its sort of present objectives.
Yeah, the No Bases network really started as a part of the anti-war movement. So in 2003, in a very specific moment, we had a conference in Jakarta. And from this conference, a declaration was made, and it's been known as the Jakarta Consensus. And the consensus between a number, quite a large number of groups working on peace and security issues, was that we would work on five different themes for the coming years. And one of these themes was the No Bases network, and it came from the realization that without all these bases, this war in Iraq would not have been possible. So without airplanes lifting off from Japan, troops being shipped in from Germany, harbors in the Netherlands letting go through all this material and all these troops to bases in Turkey that I mentioned already. So from that realization, we thought it was really important to look at this sort of system of military domination that the U.S. has set up. It was also partly by request from a lot of the local groups that are involved in this network now, because apart from the global war machine that these bases are, or these bases form, they also have an effect on the local population that live next to or around these bases. So for a long time, and still actually, the main emphasis of the network is on these local effects, and these effects include things like displacements. We've seen in Greenland, but also in Diego Garcia and other places, that people have to be displaced to make way for a base. High crime rates, of course, combined with that, the impunity of U.S. servicemen often. If they commit a crime, they cannot be held accountable for it often. Sex crimes are especially important here. Environmental damage, health hazards, but also what we would more call the loss of sovereignty. So even in countries in Europe, for example, most of the countries have U.S. bases, and it's completely impossible to go through the normal democratic processes to hold either your government or the U.S. government accountable for what is done from these bases or on these bases. Lastly, there's also issues of economic drain. These are very not for all the bases, but for in very specific cases. So, and over the last 5 years, this movement grew and grew until it's now about 550 individual organizations and members of organizations that come together via email lists and via the websites, and occasionally also in meetings, especially during social forums, to just, you know, exchange experiences, but also to strategize on a global level on, yeah, basically how we're going to get rid of these bases.
If I were to say what would be the highlights of the work in the different parts of the world, starting, let's say, with Europe and then Latin America, what would you identify?
Yeah, well, it's basically only the tip of the iceberg that I can give to you, because it's all these groups have their own campaigns, of course. But to pick out a few of the highlights, I would say that in Europe, we just had a big meeting where all these groups came together during the European Social Forum, and the groups together decided to put a high emphasis on rallying around the 60th birthday of NATO. In Europe, of course, this is a very important issue. NATO has been changing its role from a defensive, purely defensive alliance to an offensive alliance. And of course, to do this, they need all these bases. So for the people working on bases issues, this is a very important link. People in Italy, in the Czech Republic, in Belgium, etc., they see that the troops that are based in their country are used in the wars that NATO launches, especially now in the Middle East and in Central Asia. Apart from that, of course, the local campaigns, there are two campaigns that in Europe that receive a lot of attention at the moment. One is in Vicenza in Italy, around a new base that the U.S. is establishing there, where the local mayor basically support the No Basis campaign and wanted to have a public referendum, but the national government blocked it. And in the Czech Republic, of course, we have the situation where more than 80% of the population is against a new base meant for missile defense purposes, but the government is still pushing through with it. Then in Latin America, is a special case in the sense that we just had a big victory in Latin America with the closure of the military base in Manta in Ecuador, and we were quite deeply involved in the discussions leading up to the new constitution of Ecuador that now, as one of the few, or maybe the only one, I don't know, constitution in the world, says that Ecuador is a territory of peace and it forbids any troops or other military presence in the country, foreign military presence. So we're still sort of celebrating the Manta experience, but we're also worried about relocation because there are already talks with Peru and Colombia about maybe relocating this base over there. The other big issue in Latin America, more sort of upcoming issue, is so-called the Fourth Fleet, because we talk about bases, but bases include more, of course, than only the land-based, you know, big things with high fences, with barbed wire around it. It's also about the fleets. The U.S. is, of course, the only country in the world that has sort of divided up the world in different command structural sections, and all these sections have their own fleet. And they just reinstated the so-called Fourth Fleet, which is to patrol the Caribbean and the South Atlantic Ocean. So these are big campaigns going on or developing in Latin America. Yeah, and Africa is also a big campaign going on now, both in Africa and in Europe, and in the U.S. It mainly has to do with what's called AFRICOM. So by carving up the world in these different command sections, the U.S. now established a new one, which is called the African Command or AFRICOM. Despite a lot of pressure from African countries to not do it, and also a lot of pressure from within the U.S. to not do it. The problem with AFRICOM that we have is not so much maybe a military intervention in the Congo. I mean, if it would be done with UN consent, you know, and the warring parties in Congo would agree to it, I personally wouldn't have too much of a problem with UN troops basically being involved in Congo. The problem is more is that the U.S. is setting up all these what they call lily pads. These are all kind of small bases that they only have like a few troops, maybe like 50 U.S. Servicemen on them, but they can be used at any time to stage bigger interventions. And they are really setting up a sort of network, you know, covering Africa with also the stated purpose, for example, to open up the markets in Africa for U.S. military technology. And this we find very worrying. And so far, we have been quite successful in trying to block it. I mean, it still started on October 1, but the U.S. Congress, after our lobbying, decided to cut a big chunk of the funding for this AFRICOM. Also, the AFRICOM Command Center is now not yet located in Africa. It's still in Stuttgart in Germany. And this in itself is also kind of a victory because, for example, Liberia was interested in hosting the AFRICOM Command Center. And after some lobbying, but mainly after pressure from within Africa itself, within the African Union and the West African Union, Liberia was convinced, decided not to host this this command center. So this is indeed, for the coming months, I imagine, a big campaign going on. In Africa, the other big campaign still going on has to do with the people of Diego Garcia, who were expelled from their islands. These are islands in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Look it up in your atlas. And since then, they have been battling for the return to their islands, mainly in Britain, because the islands are owned by Britain after Britain annexed it, also in the 60s. And there was just a verdict after a few successes in the courts in Britain. There was just a verdict from the House of Lords in the UK that basically is just appalling. It said that, you know, although grave mistakes had been made in the 60s and blah blah blah, they now had to recognize the situation of today and the international security situation. And Diego Garcia, part of the Chagos Islands, is a major base from which invasions are launched against Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, So they had to take that into account, so the people of Diego Garcia cannot return to their island. And this too is going to be a big focus of our campaigns in the coming months.
Well, it's been really informative speaking with you, and thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
I've been speaking with Wilbert van der Zijden. He's coordinator for peace and security work with the Transnational Institute in the Netherlands. www.no-bases.org.